Welcome down the slope as ever, I'm Ewan, and again I've got Phil House. We're chatting on the back of Hibs getting beat by St Mirren at the weekend. Liam, how you doing, mate?
Yeah, I'm doing all right, thank you very much.
Good. Harry, yourself, man?
Bit shite, you can the rules. Hibs are pish, Harry's pish.
Hey Greg, how you doing, mate? Seen you today.
Yeah.
Feeling any better than
lunchtime? No. Not at all.
Right.
I have a therapy session this.
Right, St Mirren review, first half, I guess before that, team selection, a few changes again from the derby, mainly enforced, would you say, Liam, with John Newell and George Doyle dropping out?
Aye, I think so, very much enforced changes. Joe Newell obviously was very, very good against Hearts and would have, I'm sure, kept his place had they been fit to play, so disappointing for him to drop out. I think the Doig Mitchell one's an interesting one because it seems like there's a bit of a kind of tandem going on for that position. They seem to be just sort of interchanging quite a lot. So I'm probably still jury's still out on which one of those two is the better option in that position, but quite enjoying that at least we've got a bit of competition on that side of the pitch.
Yeah, it was somewhere towards the end of the transfer window. Was it the episode we spoke about? Maybe was it the episode before Mitchell signed? You highlighted that position as somewhere that we needed. I haven't really been linked by anyone, so it's been nice since Mitchell signed. Harry, 3-4-3, 3-4-2-1 again. Is it a bit weird that we're still trying to shoehorn players into that position, especially when Christian Doig just started?
The system's shite. The system's the main problem. The players aren't good enough to play in the system that Maloney's set, and as long as he keeps trying to force the system on the players, we're going to continue to struggle. Like, we'll obviously touch on it later on, but we've conceded multiple goals as a result of players not being good enough to play the system. It's embarrassing. It makes all the players look stupid, and it's not their fault because they're doing what they're being told. Obviously, individual errors force the mistakes, but the positioning of other players when one thing goes wrong, it's just ridiculous. Like, the system we're running at the moment with three at the back requires the three at the back to not make any mistakes. It requires the midfield in front of them to not make any mistakes. And we're not good enough to not make mistakes. And we've proven that on a consistent basis since Maloney got in. I just don't understand why we're still rocking with the same system. And like that first half, especially, we created nothing. Like the system we're rocking at the moment is put the ball wide to the fullbacks, get them down the flank and put balls across the box. But we've not got strikers who'll run across goal and get on the end of good balls into the box and put them home. Like, what is the point in Chris Cadden putting in 10 quality crosses and a half and not a single striker hits it once? Not a single midfielder bursts into the box and hits it once? Like, it's just so frustrating watching the players play a system that doesn't have any end product and isn't foolproof enough for us to be solid at the back. Rant over.
Greg? Greg, anything to add about it?
Players aren't good enough. Full stop, not even to play a system. Players aren't good enough. I think it's absolutely madness that the football players can't play 10 yard passes properly. Josh Campbell can't really do anything, to be honest. He struggles with most things on the football pitch. Our really only proper solid out ball is Cadden, and then you've got Doig, who is so bad at the moment. Possibly still struggling with injury, I don't really know, but if he's not fit, he shouldn't be playing. He's been poor. He's not gambling when balls are coming in the box. He's not trying to get across the defender. He's been slow. Dimitri Mitchell didn't really offer much on Saturday, I didn't think. So that's one wing already. We're down. So I just don't know. I don't think the players at the club are good enough, to be quite honest. I was quite glad to see Ewan Henderson come on and actually try and carry the ball forward from his position. He had a couple of shots on goal, really should be scoring, but it's better that than just trying to knock the ball about 5-10 yard passes sideways or attempting it. The system we want to play, you need to be good enough to play the ball quickly. Too many players want 4 or 5 touches on the ball to look up in one time. Why don't we just get the ball on the feet and shift it? You know, we need to actually pass with purpose. We're so one-dimensional and predictable. You know, as soon as Jake Doyle-Hayes gets the ball, he's going to take three or four touches. He'll look up, he'll turn a couple of times and he'll play it back the way. It's shite, to be honest. It's really bad.
Yeah. I think a few things I noticed at the weekend, we miss Joe Neil massively when he's not in the team. I think in recent weeks we've maybe criticised Neil's contribution. And Greg, a couple of weeks ago, you maybe highlighted you felt maybe it was the other way about in terms of Joe Neil potentially hampering Jake Doyle-Hayes. And out with the goal, I didn't think Doyle-Hayes was fantastic. And another thing I'm not as well when we're talking about the system, I commented on it at the game that see when we had a player like Dylan McGeoch, right? If you want to play a passing game of football, I think your centre midfielders need to want the ball no matter where they are on the pitch. Like, if they've got someone right up their arse, they need to show for it. Jake Doyle-Hayes and Josh Campbell at the weekend didn't show for the ball hardly any time. But what I did notice was they were always spreading really, really wide, like almost onto the touchline. So I don't know what the instruction is, if the centre-half's supposed to step up, if they're supposed to try and ping it into the sort of deeper striker or whatever, but it worries me that we want to be playing this passing football, building it from the back, and you're playing two centre midfielders that aren't comfortable with taking the ball, facing their own goal, and then turning on it. And let's go into the first half. The only thing that really stood out for me was, see the goal that came in the second half, there was a few instances that could have happened in the first half. But when it happened in the second half, it didn't come as not as much a surprise because it was two or three instances in the first half. But I'm struggling to think of things in the first half, Liam. Like, Chris Muller probably cutting it back to Nisbet, maybe could have a shot. Nisbet probably should be anticipating it. Do you think any other chances that we really created?
The Nisbet header, I think, was the first half. That was a chance. That's a good chance, actually. Yeah. It's an underrated chance as well because it's a really well-flighted ball in. He doesn't have to move to receive it. It's a good chance. A striker on form, at the very least, works the keeper from that position. Obviously, there's one where Muller gets kind of played in. I think it'd be harsh to say it's a really good chance, but it's definitely a chance because he kind of gets the ball caught underneath his feet. And if he doesn't get it caught underneath his feet, he gets a shot away and again works the goalkeeper. Like, I mean, we're going to come and talk about the stuff that happened in the second half, but for me, there was enough chances to have won that game of football at the weekend, comfortably enough chances. Just in front of goal just now, we're really lacking in belief and really lacking in quality, to be honest, as well, in the final third. And desperately lacking a striker that's in form.
Yeah. Does it surprise you, Harry, the pace that we're playing at? It's really laboured. Like, what do you think is driving that? Like, for me, one thing that's really noticeable is we're bringing everyone back from set plays and we're not able to count it at all because everyone's in their own box. We don't have that pacey boil that can really break up from a set play. Like, there just seems to be no real urgency when we're on the ball.
I just don't really understand the system going forward. Like, there's just not any runs in behind. There's no movement as soon as we enter the opposition half. We're just so lethargic and boring. I just don't understand what we're trying to do at all. I think that even though we've lost Boyle, I still think that we've got a few players that are capable of getting in behind. The only player that ever runs in behind is Doige. The only time he ever does it is 5 foot offside, so it doesn't make a difference anyway. Like, we need players like Muller and Nisbet to be hitting teams on the break. We need Cadden and Mitchell, like, bombing down the flanks. We're playing, like, 5 yard passes after taking four touches. Like, we're not going to create any chances doing that. It's so stupid. Like, when we played well under Jack Ross, we would be a counter-attacking team. That's the strength of the current core of the Hibs team. So I don't understand why we're trying to be a possession-based team when there's no movement going forward. It's just entirely stupid. And I don't mind a new manager trying to implement his philosophy, but if it's clear as day that it's not going to work, then stop trying to make it work. Like, what's happening isn't good enough and it's not going to be good enough, so change it up.
Yeah. Do you think, Harry, we've seen Greg will come in as well, but do you think we've seen a sign of Maloney maybe for the first time in his... We'll say post-winter break anyway, that he is willing to change. It felt like the first time we've changed our system, we changed it at half-time. It wasn't our last 10 minutes. Like, Ewan Henderson came on and it looked to me anyway, I don't know if he's agreed, that we pretty clearly went to sort of 4-2-3-1. Do you think that was maybe an acceptance of Maloney to say, right, that isn't working? Because we obviously did, we created very little. Liam mentioned a few sort of half chances in this, but one was maybe a pretty decent chance. Within 5-10 minutes of the half, we created two amazing chances.
And I think we've created some better chances in the second half. I don't know if it was a change of system so much, though, because I don't know if he's tried, like, with the way that Muller and Nisbet both play, it's difficult to tell who's the striker at times. Like, Nisbet's picking the ball up at centre mid and trying to play it down the left to Mitchell, or Muller's picking the ball up at right back and trying to take on their right midfielder, like, or left midfielder, sorry. Like, I don't understand what the roles are that the players in the attacking third are being told to play. The whole thing's baffling. Like, I think that Maloney's trying at the moment to make the game a science, and football's not a science. Like, football should be, when you're a struggling team, get the ball forward, score goals. It shouldn't be play this pass because this pass will pull at this player and then that'll make that happen. No, just fundamentals is what we need at the moment, and we're just not following them at all.
Greg, is it a worry that we, I think it was yourself that mentioned Mitchell, everything seems to be, anything good we do has to come through Chris Cadden right now. It feels like, you know, that if we get to the byline and it's a good ball across, it's coming through Chris Cadden. Everything feels very right-hand side heavy just now.
We're not used to that though. And it's been the story for a couple of years now with a one-man team. But to be honest, I don't really know. I think he did change it at half-time. For me, I don't really know what he does on Wednesday, though. It's all very well changing at half-time, having a good couple of chances or whatever, but you still lose the game. So really, it's not worked because you've not won the game. You might have looked better, but you've also conceded a goal in the second half. Surely Gary Caldwell needs to be helping him here, though. Surely he needs to be saying to him, look, this isn't working. We need to mix it up. We need to change it. You know, we'll come on to subs as well, but I don't feel like the subs are effective at all. I feel like we're actually wasting our time making subs at the moment, because the subs we're making are absolutely shocking, to be quite frank.
Right, well, the first sub we did make, Liam, was Ewan Henderson coming on at half-time. We did see a change of system, and then Henderson himself had, what, two, if not three, really good chances within sort of 10, 15 minutes. Personally, I thought we were pretty good at the start of the second half. I thought between this sort of half-time whistle and their goal, I was actually quite impressed.
Aye, we came out very well actually at the beginning of the second half. After a very lethargic first half, there was a wee bit of tempo about us. We looked to try and get the ball forward, we looked to try and get in different positions. And I think, you know, we'll come back on what Harry was saying. I think we have shown an element of adaptability because we played a very different style of football against Hearts on Tuesday to what we've played so far under Maloney. There was a lot more appetite to get the ball forward quicker against Hearts. Saw a wee bit of that in the second half. It was a bit more effective. We were less sideways and a bit more go forwards, but don't think it was a faultless performance necessarily the first 15-20 minutes that they scored, but I thought it was good. I thought it was better. There was a better tempo about us. Henderson got on the ball and tried to make things happen. I think he should be appreciated for that, but I think for every bit of appreciation you give him for it, you've got to also probably take some marks off him for not tucking away two gilt-edged chances, really. Two very, very good chances.
Yeah. Harry, I was pretty scathing of Josh Campbell for his miss against Hearts during the week. Was Henderson's first one, second one up there?
What were the two again? I remember the one where he had...
First one, he was running onto it. Keeper comes out and saves well. Second one, it comes back to him and he sort of hits it high, fairly straight down the middle.
First one,
both of them are right out of the keeper.
Yeah, first one frustrating, but I think that is a very good save. Second one needs to do substantially better. Like, he's left footed and he's got his body open to the goal, and for some reason if he goes left side to the keeper there, there's no chance in hell any keeper stopping that if he just blasts it home. I don't know what he's doing trying to go across the keeper there. It's just brain dead. Like, you don't need to be a striker to have the instinct to put that the open goal that's in front of you essentially. It's really frustrating because I think Henderson for the first 15 minutes of the half was definitely the best player in the park for Hibs, but there's no point in being the best player in the park if you're not going to have an end product. Like, his two chances, like, he scored as many goals as any other Hibs players did. Like, it's just not good enough. We need to start burying these chances. I'm not having it like should have been 4 or 5-1. Like, we were nowhere near good enough to win 4 or 5-1. Maybe if we took our chances we could have snuck a 2-1 win. Like, it was never a 5-1 game. That's just absolute bonkers.
Yeah, Greg, what did
Henderson, just on Henderson quickly, he obviously missed the two chances, but also in the two phases of play, just after they score, one, he completely fucks up a pass to Cadden, and we're basically 3-on-3, through on goal.
Yeah.
And he mishits the pass completely. And then he gives away the ball in the centre of the park, but we're in a similar position, we're rushing through on goal, and I think he still very much looks like a player who's very rusty and has not played enough football. I'm confident that there's definitely something there with Henderson, but he needs to sharpen up and adjust to the pace of the game, and he needs to do it quickly because at the moment he's not really providing this team a huge amount. Sorry, I'm going to ask
questions. No, Greg, I was just on the chances, Henderson's one specifically, where we're trying to do it as chronological as possible. After the two chances to St Mirren goal, but what were your thoughts on the two chances? Anything different to Harry and Liam's thoughts on them?
No. I'm sick of the phrase "work the goalie," or at least try and work the goalie. Fucking do me a favour. He should be scoring them both, to be honest. That it really is no excuse.
Should probably do better with one he screws wide as well, right, to the edge of the box.
Absolutely. To be honest, he should be doing better. Full stop. He needs to be better. The chances he've had, he needs to put them away. Frustrating because like Liam says, there's a player there. I think he is a good player. He shows some nice touches, but if you're in the positions he's in, you should back yourself to scoring. You should be scoring them, and he's not. Yeah. And ultimately, we've lost the game 1-0 through another individual error.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I know I said we'd get on to the goal there, but I can't really remember at what exact points it was in the second half. But Harry, you mentioned in the group chat that you felt it was probably Chris Hatcardon's worst half of football in the second half, maybe of the season. I just felt it's in the second half his decision making. Now, I know people have been very critical, and you guys have been of the strikers not getting across the defenders and stuff, but I feel sometimes Cadden's decision making shocking. Like, really, really poor at times. And I don't know if it's helped by a lack of cohesion with the strikers, because we see him fizz one across the 6-yard box, nobody goes for it. Then he'll try and cut back the next one in the cut across. But a few times in the second half, he was in a great position, sort of an inside channel on the right of the box. He easily could have got a shot across. He sort of doesn't really do anything. He sort of passes it across the goal. Like, but it's no real across because nobody's there. Like, you know, he's in a good shooting position. And then 2 minutes later, he gets the ball 25 yards out and he fucking passes it back to the keeper with a shot. Like, we've been quite complimentary to Cadden, and I do. He's a massive player for us. Everything goes through him, but I think sometimes his end ball does have to be a little bit better as well. He has to give the strikers a chance sometimes.
I think that one where he shot and it kind of daisy cut to the keeper, I think kind of sums up his second half. It was just a bit pathetic. I think first half he was his usual self and he played pretty well, but the second half, as you say, his decision making, his execution when he was on the ball was poor. His, like, the one thing that's consistent with Cadden is his passing, especially at short range, is always good. And he was just misplacing passes. I don't know what went wrong with him in the second half, but he just looked terrible. Like, if he'd played like that on a consistent basis, then he would be the brunt of a lot of frustration. I was really annoyed. I don't think he's the sole reason we were poor in the second half.
No.
But, you know, when the team's playing poor, you need the best players in the team and the most consistent players in the team to play well. And it's just frustrating that he didn't. Yeah, that, like, there was a few chances, as you say. There was one or two times he should have been played much better balls through to him, and he was getting put a bit wide a couple of times where he could have created shooting opportunities. But that shot, that was terrible. Like, he literally had 10 yards of space he could have ran to before shooting. He could have tried to play it through. Like, it just summed it up. It was an awful decision. It was awful execution, and it was just bad second half at the office.
Yeah, right. Highest bidder, who wants to take us away with the goal?
I'll be here all night, so let someone else go.
Liam, take us away. Or Harry, what were you going in there, Harry?
I'll start, and then Liam can take over for me. So I'm not going to touch just the goal. I'm going to touch on why I think the system's shit. So against Celtic at Celtic Park, first goal we concede. We're like, what on earth is Hanlon doing? What on earth is Rocky doing? Because there's genuinely about 30 yards between them, and then we lose the ball after a sloppy bit of play from Campbell. One pass, 20 yards of space, striker could literally sit down, do a front row, get up again and put it in the back of the net before a centre-back gets near him. Then you've got the goal that we conceded the other week. No, goal against Livy. Campbell in the midfield, loses the ball. Centre-backs are about 30 yards apart. Full-backs are touching the touchline. There's so much space for them to drive into. Next thing you know, back of the net. That one there, you've got Stevenson on the throw-in. You've got the centre-back tucked in the corner. Dabrowski's coming towards the edge of the box to give the player an option. You've got Rocky about 40,000 yards away at the other end, and then Cannon loses the ball and Ronan literally takes about 10 steps before anybody's within a 5-yard vicinity of him. Great finish, nothing to do with Dabrowski. I think Dabrowski could have been perfectly positioned, it still would have went in the back of the net. It's just a rocket air shot. It's just terrible. The system, if you make one mistake in midfield, you need to have someone there to back you up, and there just isn't. If like Jake Doherty needs to do better, he tries to take four touches before he gets the ball out of his feet. It's not good enough for a central midfielder, but he's not got any support around him. Like, yeah. I don't understand the way we're setting up. It just doesn't allow us to play.
Liam, do you want to come straight in?
I hear what Harry's saying. I don't know how having two centre backs and two centre midfielders makes the system any better. It's just players' positioning. Like you take one centre back away, we've got one fewer centre back. That means we've got one less guy to defend the ball when we give it up. We're not going to play with any more than two sitting central midfielders. So I think you can talk about the system all you like, but ultimately it's individual responsibility. If you're 30 yards out for your own goal and you cough up possession like that, doesn't matter what system you play, any system in the land's going to put you in trouble. Same with the Campbell one against Celtic. The Campbell one's a terrible pass, and the Doyle Hayes one, he dithers on the ball. St Mirren, I felt, and maybe just noticed it after the goal, but I felt like St Mirren targeted Doyle Hayes a bit. I felt like they knew that he was potentially a little bit prone to dithering, shall we say. Conor Ronan comes from his blind side, I think. And takes the ball off him. There's another man pressing him. There's two guys on him. Like, you don't necessarily always put two players on a guy as soon as the throw-in's taken. I think it was interesting as well from Stevenson, because he elects to throw the ball to Doyle Hayes, who's between, I think it was Porteous and Rocky, if I'm not mistaken. When actually, in some respects, Sharp was probably the easy option. I'm not digging out Stevenson, because it's ultimately Jake Doyle Hayes' fault that we conceded. I just think the whole thing was just a really odd move. It's a terrible goal to concede. I agree with Harry in that much, but I don't agree that the system's to blame I don't really agree the system's to blame for any of the problems at the moment. It's just individual responsibility. If the player doesn't do what he's put there to do, then you can see the goal.
I think the main point I always try to drive across was, I think the reason that there's such a gap in distance between the players is because Maloney's told the players to have a gap in distance between them, because I don't think it's a coincidence that it's happened about four times since January. I think the players are told you need to be that far apart and get the ball moving, and I think that's what's causing these goals. I think if they're more
narrow, one less centre back could be an even bigger gap.
It's not the fact how many centre backs are on the pitch. It's the fact that they're being told to play as far apart from each other as they are. I think there needs to be some form of continuity.
In that situation, you would potentially. And I'm not against the way that we're trying to play. Look, I think like you would maybe be expecting Rocky and Cadden to sort of tuck round potentially. I'm guessing is maybe what you're. Look, Greg, I had to be honest before I give my two pennies on it at the throw, and I glanced into the stand, and when I came back, the St Mirren player was running into the box, so I had to watch it back to exactly see entirely what happened for the goal. I, watching it back, Liam sort of touching it, I don't know about Jake Doyle Hayes is going to go with that ball.
I really don't know what he wants to do. I don't know if Rocky's out wider, then that's probably the out ball there. He's looking to play it wide, or he'll play it back to Porteous or Stevenson or whatever. I think the way that Maloney maybe wants us to play is we want the centre mid to drop in between the centre half, take the ball and get things moving. You can blame systems, you can blame whatever. The boy's not controlled the ball correctly.
Just look after the ball better.
It's simple stuff. It is really, really basic stuff. He's not controlled the ball from a throw-in. And
I just think the
Mirren
pressed as well a lot of the game, I thought.
Look, they did press us, but at the same time, we invite that pressure by making silly mistakes. That was a silly mistake, and it wasn't the only one. It's basic stuff every week that we do. We don't do it well enough. Campbell, last week, tried to... I don't know what he's trying to do. He's looking out for 50, 60-yard passes. Gets his pockets picked. Same stuff. 2 weeks in a row. There we go. If it can happen to Campbell, who's got scary amounts of talent, it can happen to anyone. So there we go. Jake Doyle Hayes, do better, please.
One of the worst shows in history. Scary amounts of talent.
Absolutely couldn't believe it, because he had a decent 45 against Celtic. But I'm not being funny. My granny could have fucking ran that midfield against Celtic in the second half. We were that bad. But he's got a scary amount of talent, because he's picked up a ball on the left and he's already jogged 20 yards in the field and played the ball wide. I mean, it's unbelievable what players get credit for these days.
people basically should wait to get a slightly bigger sample size than 45 minutes before making judgment on individual players. Just my
view, we know what's coming every week. You can read people like a book. You know what's coming every week. Yeah.
See, just talking about Josh Campbell, is there an his confidence is gone. Don't know if he's not.
To be honest, Ewan, my confidence in watching him's gone because that's been weeks he's been bad for, genuinely. And you could draw it. You can see he is nowhere near the level that he needs to be at Hibernian Football Club. He's not at that level. Do you know what? Edinburgh City possibly is his level. That's probably why he done well there.
Can I suggest that Josh Campbell has a hiatus from the starting lineup?
I would agree with that.
Longer than just a game or two, probably.
I think although Henderson did miss two really, 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 really good chances, he needs to be coming back in for Campbell. Campbell needs time to sit in his arse and watch the game and understand what's going on because he seems... And you know what, right? Going back to Harry with the system, sorry to just keep going here, but people need to be intelligent with a football mind to understand the system and know how it needs to be played. But there we go. To be able to control the ball from a throw-in, it really is basic stuff.
I think it's clear that the boys aren't good enough for that, though. That's what my point is.
I know, Harry, but it's not difficult to control a ball from a throw-in, though. And what's he going to do? He's going to turn around and play a 10-yard, 15-yard pass sideways. That's obviously what the plan is if Rocky and Poitras have split the either side of the box. And anyone blaming Dubrovsky really needs to give himself a shake. Really needs to give himself a shake because it's not his fault. He's there offering an option or whatever. Like, to be fair, we spoke about Ronan last week on the podcast. He's a good player. Good technique. He scored a couple of really good goals this season. And he scored another one. It's a very, very good finish. You know, the boy's picked up. He's done well to win the ball back. He's stuck it in the net.
Kevin Nisbet could do with some lessons. He never fucking tried to play foot, and I've been a big supporter of Kevin Nisbet, but that sort of transitions us in nicely. Right after the goal, Liam, you mentioned the chance. Henderson was sort of, we were breaking sort of 3-on-2, 3-on-3. Henderson underplays it to Cadden. We get a bit of a break of the ball. Nisbet's got a score. It's a good save.
Yeah. But sad, isn't it? Because Kevin Nisbet last season just tucks that away like a meal's away. I know it's just one of those horrible cliches where a guy in our time scores the goal and you know
close your ante the keeper saves pitch. And it stays, like, even if the keeper gets the touch and it dribbles in the corner because even at one point it looked like it was still going to go in.
It's kind of just hate using one moment in the game to summarise Sunday's season, but kind of summarises Kevin Nisbet's season. Like, the chances have been there at points. I don't think we've been creating the same number and quality chances we did last season, but the chances have been there. He's just looked like a guy who's low on confidence, low on belief. You know, we've seen signs the last few weeks the work rate's coming back, but he is struggling. There is a part of Kevin that's missing. I feel for the guy because I think he's going through a really tough period in his life, and it's understandable. But I just would love to just see him back at his best for him and for us.
I'd love to see Kevin Nisbet in the flesh at his best because I think we all enjoyed it through the fucking laptop screen and TV screen last season, but even at the start of this season he was alright, wasn't he? You know, like when we were playing well he was okay.
I think the chance last Tuesday against Hearts when he gets in, he tries to shift on his right foot. I think maybe a player more confident just takes that to the left. I think he is feeling a wee bit like he can't quite make that. But I do feel sorry for him, and the slagging he is getting is not required, to be honest. He comes deep, he tries to pick up the ball, he tries to orchestrate things. I mean, he's doing absolutely everything other than putting the ball in the back. Then ultimately, that is his job. However, he's doing everything else. So I don't think we can ever go at him. And I think it's very, very unfair that people are digging him out, to be honest.
I would agree. I think I gave it the weekend. Like, you're both right. He has a striker. He's paid to put the ball in the net. But I thought again, he was one of probably our best player. The same as he was against Hearts. No, was Livingston, sorry. The same as I thought he was good against Livingston. I thought he was good against St Mirren. And he is just missing that goal from his game. Harry, for all the chances we created, Maloney can say 4-5-1 would have been fair. After they scored, after that Nisbet chance, we never really created anything else. No, unless I'm wrong, I can't think of anything really.
We had one bright spark that looked like they were going to create chances, but nothing really materialised from it. But yeah, no, I think St Mirren didn't have to attack. Like, Goodwin said it after the game. He was like, we knew that Hibs would make a mistake and we knew we would capitalise on it. Like, they literally played the gamble of, what do you call it, us not attacking them, like, not taking our chances when they came, and them creating one chance out of us making a mistake. Because bar the Jordan Jones cutting the ball back, they didn't really create any of their own chances, did they?
No. I thought St Mirren were all right in the first half, to be fair. I thought they were decent enough. I think teams have sussed us out, though, as well. Like, you know what I mean? If you put someone on Nisbet, and you, because he's the one that's going to drop deep to try and get on the ball, and you block any potential passes into the centre midfielders, what do we do? You know, if you stop Cadden from playing, I felt the first half against Hearts, Cadden had Andy Halliday on toast. Second half, when he's on a booking, Hearts sussed it out, and we never really got any joy in that side. And that's interesting what Goodwin said after the game. We're obviously looking fairly predictable. Greg,
we have done for years, though, let's be honest.
Greg, talking about predictability, the subs, they were a little bit different at the weekend in terms of the faces that came on. Scott Allen came on, Dre Wright didn't come on. But first sub was Henderson. Look, we spoke about Henderson, probably had a decent impact on the game. The subs that followed that, Josh Doig, James Scott, Scott Allen, was that? Am I missing some? And Jasper. What did you make of the substitutes' impact on the game or lack of?
Not impressed, to be honest. I know Henderson had the most time. So by default and sample size, he probably has the biggest impact on the game. The fact he's bringing James Scott on it is baffling. A man that couldn't be asked getting himself fit for the club. Jasper looked promising. Please don't put anything on Instagram, though, when you've been beaten at home by St Mirren. And who was the other one? Scott Allen. See if you're going to bring Scott Allen on, you need to give him a fair whack at the game. Maybe 20 minutes, 25 minutes. I'm not happy with the fact that he's not even naming Melkerson on the bench. He apparently needs to adapt to Scottish football, but he's not even sitting on the bench watching the games. So I don't really understand how he's meant to adapt if he's just sitting in a stand. But why not get him involved in the match day experience? I know the map shagger says that the pitches maybe aren't right, but to be quite honest, means nothing. It's a grass pitch. You play football on grass. I really haven't reading into anything.
I don't know if it was one of you or a seed sort of twist, or maybe he's just really good at long balls there or something. Like, he needs a certain type of grass or something.
I mean, it's madness. I mean, I'm sure.
That would be me. I always mention long balls at any opportunity I can. Huge long balls enthusiast.
I mean,
but only on synthetic surfaces.
The boy's a professional football player. You're not telling me that he can't play on grass. Come on. You know, you can sit there and see what you want. You can name all the stats and all your XG. And then say, oh, the surface might not suit him. Honestly, it really infuriates me what that boy comes out with. Because it's absolute rubbish. Absolute rubbish on the daily. But
he's been training on grass for 4 weeks as well. Can we just say that? Like, he's literally been training on it for 4 weeks. It's not the work permit, but he's been on grass.
There is only one 3G pitch in the league. Like, I think if we're signing someone that can only play on artificial turf, then... They wonder we've been loaning every man in the dog to fucking kill him, man. We need them in the league,
it's just not an argument that is applicable. Oh, the boy's got boots. I'm sure he's got studs and mouldies. Not a big deal.
Even I've got two pair of boots. Like, come on now.
Well, you've got the Adidas 2-stripe eye, but like, do you know what I mean? It's just I honestly just don't get it. Like, the surely Melkerson, grass or no grass, is a better option than James Scott. Come on, James Scott, they couldn't be asked getting himself fit.
Greg, can I ask you a question? Bit of a tangent, but what kind of boots do you wear? Do you wear the Gabriel Heinze black boot numbers with no logo or no nothing on them, like Roy Keane?
To be honest,
as soon as I was at Ox Gangs, I did used to wear all black boots. However, I've now gone to the light yellow slash green tight boots.
Adidas, the fucking multicolored.
I know what you mean.
Listen, you need to add a wee bit of spice to it. You need to add a wee bit of spice. But yes, I'm going to go down the stair and polish them black. Just for you, Liam.
Well, we're on it. What's everyone else's choice of boots? I've got a pair of silver and red.
Two stripes.
Be honest, two stripes. It's technically five stripes, isn't it? So when they got delivered, one of these like sort of stickers, which is basically what they are, because I got the expensive one, so I was a proper lightweight, and one of the fucking stripes had come off the fucking front of it. What's your boot of choice, Liam, for fives in the pits?
Nike Mercurial Pro something or other, obviously, because I'm a
lovely.
You're a real man. Harry, when you're tearing it up in your tie-dye shorts,
Sound like a strange one, but I actually got mine, and they're a tribute to a former Hearts player. Remember the player Craig Thompson? You'll have to watch on YouTube to get that one.
for the benefit of the tape, Harry has shown us a pair of Adidas Predators. I'm sure you can all put two and two together. Let's move on quickly. Graham Ricks, yes, let's move on.
Liam, substitutes and lack of Melkerson on the bench, where are you at with it? The subs have been predictable for the most part under Maloney.
It's Hearts. But you used four subs against Hearts. Is that the only game where he's not used five subs as well?
Yes.
Have you ever watched an international friendly back in the day when there was unlimited substitutes and you watched them pick on like 11 players for the 11 players that are on the pitch at staggered intervals? I think it interrupts the flow of the team probably a little bit more than we'd like to. I also think there are players that are getting minutes for getting minutes sake, to be honest. I think he's probably got 13 or 14 players that he really wants to use, and he's bringing guys in off the bench that I don't think he really believes in truly, and me certainly as a Hibs fan stopped believing in a while ago. So it's unfortunate, but I think the perspective I keep trying to look back on when I'm thinking about that squad is the two January exciting signings I was most excited about were Melkerson and Harry Clark, and neither of them have been available yet for selection. Those were the two that when we signed them, I was like, oh, great, those two will come in and instantly play and make a difference. We've not been able to select either of them yet for whatever reason. I hope they're fucking good when they do get their opportunity, because by God, we need it.
You know what's going to happen? Harry Clark's going to come in like the end of March, be fucking fantastic, and Arsenal are going to call him back in the summer.
Yeah. Well,
that's the risk you're on, eh? At least you've got someone out. I'm at that point. I mean,
Liam.
Apparently, Melkerson's incredible, so we'll wait and see.
Before we move on, sorry, are you still sticking to subs?
Go for it if you want, mate.
I was just going to say, I think I've been very negative tonight, but one thing that was positive is the fact that Jasper actually wanted to get on the ball and actually wanted to run at players. That was incredibly refreshing compared to what we've seen in the last few weeks. The only problem was there was times he had to drop back to centre-back to get the ball, which when you're trying to attack in the last minute is frustrating. And when him and Scott Allen are playing 1-2s at the halfway line, it's the 91st minute. It was a bit of a bollock, but I think he'll be a positive player moving forward. I don't know if he's a type that will break into the first team or if he'll be more of a is only impactful off the bench. I'm hoping it's the former, but I'm kind of scared it might be the latter.
Mm-hmm.
I think Harry's way off for that. I think he will be a starter, to be honest.
I want him to be great, but I don't know if he'll be able to do it from the off, you know.
Well, there's only one way to find out. I think you'll find it quite well. Be look, I know he was.
I think if we give the same treatment as Melkerson, we'll find it in a couple of months.
See, to be honest, I know that he was at Colchester in League Two. I don't really know what sort of level that is. Play okay, but he was starting for them every game, so I think he has got it in him. But we'll wait and see. I think it's going to take time to embed these players in. Considering we've signed an absolute pile of players, not all for the first team, but I'm sure we'll come on to that as well. Once you actually pays attention to the podcast tonight.
I am paying attention. Liam, the B team, the under-18s, Steve Keane's been fairly vocal in the last couple of days. What's your thoughts on where we're at with that? We sort of spoke about it last week, but I think we want to go into it a little bit more depth.
Steve Keane interview was interesting. For those of you who didn't or haven't had the opportunity to listen to it last night, I suppose he gives a little bit of an explanation as to what his role is at the club as academy director. And I think he kind of sets out what the structure is going to be going forward. So he talks about having hired someone to essentially fill out a schedule of games for the development squad so they can go and play teams down in England and Scotland regularly, which I think could be a positive thing. I think I'm certainly of the opinion, and I know Greg is too, that they should be playing against men rather than playing against boys at that level. He also mentions something that I thought was really good news, that Ian Boozle has been brought into the club to help work with the development squad, which anybody who's come across him will have met and experienced his enthusiasm at first hand, and obviously cult hero, potentially even verging on kind of legend status at Hibs, given his time at the club. An absolutely terrific footballer. And I think even the jobs that he's done at Hamilton, typically he's been jobs where kind of the team that he's worked for have punched above their weight. So I think credit to him for that. It's an interesting one, because I think the debate has come up, and it's maybe just the optics of signing players at a point in time when the club's kind of struggling in the first team, and there's all these players coming in to play for the B team. And I think that's certainly with quite a vocal kind of group of fans, it's not gone down very well. And I can understand some of that given the timing of it. But actually, there are, I think, some really encouraging signs for the future. We've got an under-18s team who are absolutely flying. We're signing B team players who hopefully within time will be able to come in and improve the squad. So I don't know about you guys, but I don't necessarily see a huge amount wrong with that.
I think it's a bad thing.
These are usually the same people moaning that no one's coming through the academy, or we're not investing enough in the academy. So we've put a lot of time into it. We've obviously hired Steve Keane. We've now hired Boozy. We're signing players for the B team for the future. So look, Kimps could do whatever they wanted and folks still wouldn't be happy with it. But I think it's very harsh.
Including ourselves.
I think it's very harsh to kind of slate that, because Hibs are right to plan for the future. You know, let's not just look fucking 3 months or 6 months into the future. You know, we've got the club's going to be around for however long, so we need to actually plan, and maybe we can start bringing these players through and start getting them involved. So I don't really see an issue with it. I know that some people might think there are more important things going on, but I don't think you need to really focus on one thing. Especially not at the club the size of Hibs, as you can focus on a few departments at the one time. So I think for those who are happy with it, I think I would absolutely agree with them. I think that in the long run, it will definitely benefit the club.
See, for me, right, when Steve Keane got appointed, when Hibs were announcing all the partnerships, when Hibs were hiring Ben Kensel, whatever we were doing, the results were going well, people were saying the club's been run so well, X, Y, Z, right? It just shows that the entire mood of the fan base is entirely dependent on first team performances. You know, these shouts for, oh, we'll just get these players in straight away. See, if they were at that level, we'd have signed them as first team players initially, but we're bringing in players that have decent experience. The guy from Norway's played in the second division. The guy we signed from Standard Liège has played a couple of games for them and played in the Dutch second division. They're signing on 2.5, 3.5 year contracts, some of them. They're not coming, they're not uprooting their fucking life to Scotland, in my opinion, to sit in a development squad for 2 years, or 3 years. I'm sure there is a view to getting these players into the first team, but when they're fucking ready. What would people have rather? Hibs didn't announce them as B team signings and they don't feature for 6 months. Maybe you could argue, is it a bit strange that we make big deals of the signings when they're not for the first team? I don't know, maybe. But it don't take a genius for me. Steve Keane's been doing interviews. Sean Maloney was very straightforward when he was talking about Renard again, is it Haig?
How
he said to the media, no, he's one for the development squad initially. So as far as I'm concerned, you just have to look at them as two separate entities. Look at Celtic signed that guy for Ireland that we were looking at, and he's went straight into their development team. We're not the only team in the world that'll do it. We're not the only team in the country that'll do it. And just because you're going through a tricky spell in the first team doesn't mean you should put everything else in the entire building on hold, as far as I'm concerned. Especially when we've known over the last year that Ron Gordon, Ben Kensel, Jack Ross, when he was here, we all referenced that there was an age group that we were missing. We had to pause our full development structure through COVID. I just got a bashing in the media for it. Well, you've got to get the club up and running again. You know what I mean? What would they rather us do? Livingston have just started their youth academy up. And do you know what Livingston done? They held open trials. Would you rather Hibs just opened up HTC and just any Tom, Dick and Harry came in and trialled? Or would you rather they went around Europe and tried to find people that they think they could develop and in 2 years' time they're going to be fit for purpose? It's mental. It's mental.
There will also be a profile for players that Hibs want to bring into the youth academy. I think people are just happy to criticise at every twist and turn because things aren't going well in the first team. But please remember that this is not Mulroney's team. You know, he's had a lot of shit to deal with. Unfortunately, Harry Clark's not been able to play as well. I think he would have been a big player for us. So, like, you know, people need to just calm down, maybe take a wee step back, settle themselves down, and, you know, it will take time. It's not going to happen overnight. Folk weren't happy under Jack Ross. Mulroney can't just change that straight away. One thing I would say, though, is we've obviously not replaced Boyle. That's poor, but that's the position we're in now where we just need to go what we've got. So.
Yeah. Have you got anything to add on the sort of A-teams, B-team side of things?
I was going to say, like, the one thing that I think we really, the most ludicrous comment I felt was, it's not the time to plan for the future, it's the time to plan for now. All the time is to plan for the future, all the time is to plan for now. You don't just be like, all right, for the rest of the season, we're going to make sure the first team's developing. No, we're going to make sure the first team's developing, and then in a year's time, if these guys have developed as they should, they'll be in the first team and the problem's solved. Like, as Greg touched on, I thought it was a very good point as well. We're a big enough club that we're not just going to, what's on the pitch matters. Like, the things that folk will complain about, like the off the field stuff, like the TVs and that, we take them for granted. That's magic. Like, it's brilliant the stuff the club's brought that in. And the development, that's magic. It's great that we're looking towards the future. Like, just because the team's playing crap on the pitch at times doesn't mean that you should criticise when the team do things off the pitch, because it's all separate. Like, Ron Gordon buying, if he was to build, like, corners in the stands, that wouldn't be taken away from the first team. That would just be building corners in the stands. Don't bloody... It's just stupid, you know, when people come to conclusions as if it would make a difference. Frustrates me. That's fans stupid. There you go.
Including Harry blaming everyone on the system. The fact it's raining today is based on the fact that Hibs play our system.
Just to finish up on that, just see on the just on the under-18s, I know we've been here before, but, you know, Falstones and stuff with Golden Generations, but based on reports from a couple of folk who I know who've been going to the games or were at the game, I should say, on Friday night, obviously Hibs advertised it quite late in the day, so none of us were able to get down to HTC to watch it, but I think this generation has serious promise and serious potential based on the reports that we're getting. And actually, it's encouraging that we're building a pathway for those guys. But if you look at the likes of O'Connor and Laidlaw and Connor Young and the two McIntyre brothers, and potentially even, I can't remember the name of the guy, the Syrian guy that came on the Hamlin Stevenson scholarship. If those guys come through, and because they're absolutely... you know, they're running riot in the league and the cup, they're clearly a level above the rest of the teams down there. The fact that we've got a development squad for them to go into and hopefully take themselves on another level next season is an encouraging thing. Just, I think the club really should look at the Lowland League structure. I know everyone was kind of against it when the Old Firm teams were in there. Just give the Old Firm another competitive advantage over them. And in a time when the Old Firm have got enough competitive advantages, they probably don't need any more of a helping hand than they've already got.
I actually seen that the scoreline on Friday flattered Rangers. It should have been a lot more than 4-2, which I think speaks volumes considering the amount of money that Rangers will plough into the youth academy, and I think, although we have had false dawns before, I think this does feel very different. This feels like an under-18s team with a lot of momentum. We're now trying to build the gap between the under-18s and the first team. So I think things are only going to get better for you, in my opinion, in terms of the young players coming through. And we've got a lot of talent in the academy.
Right. Back to first team matters, because ultimately that's what the listeners care about.
it shouldn't just be that. Carry on.
I want Hibs to play 4-2-3-1 at Ibrox. I want us to start Josh Doig and Chris Cadden at wing at fullback. I want us to start Mitchell at left wing and Jasper at right wing. And I want us to have a little bit of a go. I think for me, the one maybe sub that was missing at half time in the St Mirren game, I would have got Josh Doig on for Stevenson earlier. I'd like to see Doig and Mitchell on the same side. I think they can complement each other well. I'd like to see Jasper and Cadden. Do you know what? I'd like us to have a little bit of a go. A guy we're all friendly with, Leon, tweeted this morning saying he's not all that worried of a pumping because we've actually been all right at the back. And I don't know if I disagree with that, to be honest. I think we need to score goals, and I think at the end of the day, we need to score goals to win the game, and we're not going to score goals by sitting there and shiting ourselves. I think Hearts went there and were fairly defensive and got their arse handed to them yesterday. We've beat this Rangers team this season, and I'm not confident that we'll do it again, but I'm confident that the only way we're going to do it is by trying to take the game to them. Liam, what do you want to see from Hibs against maybe what do you expect to see from Hibs?
I think you summarised it quite nicely, just a bit more endeavour. I think we need to be, I'm not going to get hung up on systems, but I do think we need to be more aggressive than perhaps we've been in some of our games this season, against probably Celtic and Rangers, just to call it what it is. I think we need to have a very clear plan of how we're going to get into the final third and create chances, because one thing I would say from watching that Hearts game yesterday, I mean, they didn't really lay a glove on Rangers, to be honest. They were 1-0 down at half time. They did try to come out a wee bit more in the second half, to their credit, but then they got absolutely blown away in the second half because they were so biscuit-erst in the first half, essentially. So they need that. We need to be prepared to get the ball forward quicker as well at Ibrox, because we're not going to be able to play through them the way we might be able to play through some other teams in the league. So whether that means going two up top or not, I don't know. Or whether it just means having Mueller and Jasper closer than us, but I don't know. But we need to show something very, very different to get a result from Ibrox from what we showed in recent performances.
You mentioned Jasper there. Would you like to see him come straight in to start an 11?
Yes, probably. Not because I feel like he's particularly earned it, but because I don't really see what other alternative there is at the minute. I'm sounding fucking extremely negative, and I didn't mean to be, but I just don't really see what other option there is. I'd probably be tempted to go Mueller, Nisbet and Jasper, or Mueller, Doig and Jasper.
Oh, yourself, Harry, same question to you. What would you like to see? What do you expect to see? And just to interrupt you, Harry, Greg, be prepared, because same question's coming to you after.
That's fine. I'm already prepared.
I think I'm glad Hearts played Rangers before we did. I think that they had quite a lot of pent-up frustration that they very clearly took out on Hearts, and I don't think that the intensity they showed in the second half will be there as much when we face them, which is a good thing. I think trying to think positively, Rangers defensively has been very leaky. Hearts never really got at them enough to expose it, but obviously conceding 3 goals in back-to-back games for Rangers at the moment is a bit unheard of. So there's definitely potential there for us to cause an upset, and it tends to be the worst form we're in and the better form Rangers are in, the more of a chance we've got of taking anything away from them. I don't see why we wouldn't have a shot. If worst comes to worst and we get a 5-0 pump, and if we've got 10 shots at goal and we've given it our best, then I don't think the fans will complain too much. Whereas if we go and we sit in and we just push the foot around and have 60% possession and lose 4-0, I think the fans will rightly be absolutely livid. I think there's a way to play when you play against Rangers and Celtic, and I think what we've done at Celtic Park was wrong. I think trying to just keep the ball against them is not going to win you the game, but I think actually going at them and attacking them and trying to get the ball in behind and running at them is the way forward. So I'm hoping that we see a bit more of a open game and willingness to attack.
Okay. Greg?
I want to see urgency. I want to see aggression. I really want to see us trying to get at them. I think the only way we're going to get anything from the game is if we do put pressure on them. But we really need to be aggressive in the tackle. We need to be a bit urgency about our play. Urgency about getting the ball forward as well. Really just getting on top of them, because look, Hearts didn't really lay a glove on them yesterday. I thought Rangers were all right, but they had a lot of time and space and areas just to kind of work the ball and get in positions. I think Bassey and Taverney are there to be got at. I don't think we should be frightened of them. I think Mitchell on one wing and Jasper on the other would be a good shout, purely just so we can get at them. I think that the pair can be got at. It's by an out ball for us. It's an area of the pitch that we can look to get balls in the box from. But yeah, we really just need to be a lot more aggressive and play with a lot more urgency and look, be confident on the ball, you know, because yeah. We know as well as anyone that as soon as Rangers fans get on their back, it's an uphill battle for the home team. So if we can go there and frustrate them early doors, not let them play their game, then I think the fans may turn. The fans didn't really get a chance to turn yesterday because that's something usually laid into them. But if we can go there, aggression, urgency, frustrate them, be expansive, be confident, I think we've got a great chance. To be honest, I don't think we're miles off it. I really don't. I think that we can go there and hurt them. We've proved it before when we've had squads play worse than this. I really don't think we should be afraid of them.
Harry, you've spoke a lot about systems tonight. In fact, I think we've all spoke a lot about systems tonight. Can we be more aggressive? Can we be playing at a faster pace in that 3-4-3? Will that system, if he plays it again, allow us to do that?
I don't think it's the formation. By the system, I mean that the roles that the players are playing within the formation. Just this, everybody drifts 15 yards apart from each other, and there's no regrouping when we lose possession. I just find it very frustrating to watch, and it looks like we're trying to turn the game into a science, and I just don't think that's the way this squad can work at all. We've proven, like, in recent years, our best formation's always been with three at the back. Like, I don't think you can deny that, to be honest. But as you say, 4-2-3-1 with the current team does look like it puts our individual players in the best possible positions. And I think that the way we do need to get at these teams is by having players running in behind and running down the wing. And we have got a relative good amount of pace on the wing, particularly on the left if you've got Doigan and Mitchell. So hopefully it's something that we can look to take advantage of. But I'm fully expecting a 3-4-3 and to sigh when I see the team sheet like I did against St. Mirren.
Yeah, look, we spoke about both of the centre midfielders for the weekend. At the end of the day, Joe Newell's not fit. They both play. I think that's pretty self-explanatory. If Joe Newell is fit, who's his partner in the middle of the park, Liam? I think he's frozen. Oh. Yeah, on you go, Greg.
I would probably say Henderson, to be honest. I think that's only... I think Doyle Hayes and Campbell should be dropped. I don't really know. I think I would prefer to see a 4-2-3-1, to be honest, where you've got two sitting. And then one more advanced with two wingers either side of that. But yeah, I like the way that Neil went about his business in the derby. I thought that he was aggressive, he was putting the boot in, he was trying to get things going. So I think we could do a very similar performance to that from Joe Neil.
Yep, what about Michelle Harry? I'm assuming if Neil's fit, you'd have him straight back in. What would be your sort of go-to midfield right now if everyone was available?
I don't want to throw players under the bus, but at the moment, the go-to midfield for me would be Henderson and Yule. I don't think that Campbell or Doyle Hayes have been anywhere near the stratosphere of good enough. And I think that if, like, Campbell, as I've said last week, I think that he's getting worse and worse every week, and I don't necessarily think that's exclusively his fault. I think that he was thrown into the first team and I still think he was pretty good for the first four or five games. And I think as soon as a player that young starts dropping off in form, they should be taken out of the team. and the fact he's getting worse every week is brutal. I just don't think he should be getting the game time at the moment. I'd hate throwing players under the bus, but he's just not good enough at the moment. And Doyle Hayes, I also think, needs a break from first-team football. He's been struggling for months now. My starting midfield, assuming Newell's fit, would definitely be Henderson and Newell in the middle. I know Henderson's relatively lightweight, but you got to play the best players when you just have to. So that's who I'd play.
Yeah. Not sure if Liam's here or not. Score predictions. Harry?
I'm never going to predict us to lose against Hearts or Rangers, so, or draw for that matter. I'm always going for the win, so I'll say 3-0 Hibs.
Good man. How about yourself, Greg?
I'll go for a sweaty 1-1.
Sweaty 1-1. Do we score first or we come from behind?
No, we come from behind. We don't, I don't think we'll do what we want us to do. I think it might be a wee bit of a back to the wall and then hit them on the counter, but I'll go 1-1. However, wouldn't begrudge a win.
Who's nabbing the goal, mate?
I really hope it's Nisbet, to be honest, above anyone else. I really hope it is, because he needs to get back to his best. We know what he's capable of. I think he's, for one reason or another, he's maybe struggled, but I really hope it is Nisbet, to be fair.
Yeah. Again, Liam's sort of flattering it. You there, Liam?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, mate, we can. Score prediction.
Brilliant. I'm going to go on the basis that when you're winning, it never feels like you're going to lose. And when you're losing, it never feels like you're going to win. So using that as my rationale, I'm going to say 3-0 Hibs.
You and Greg are on the same scoreline there.
No, it's
Harry. You and Harry, sorry. What am I?
Oh, I missed it. I wouldn't have gone for it if I'd known Harry had gone for it already. But no,
Harry knows that.
It's going to be.
Wouldn't it present to the same as Specky? Fuck that.
It's going to be retribution for Ryan Porteous. Ryan Porteous at Ibrox with a goal. Probably in front of the Hibs fans, chaos, and then another couple from some other cunt.
Fine, works for me, mate.
Great player, by the way.
That's some other cunt. Good. I'm going to go 2-1 Hibs. We're going to be 2-0 up inside 20 minutes, and we're going to hang on for fucking grim death for 70 minutes after that. Let's play a game of still score predictions, similar score predictions. Nick Walsh predictions. What we got for Nick Walsh on Wednesday night, Harry?
That's a fun one. I think that regardless of when Rangers score, I think if you watch him, he'll give a wee fist bump. Just like it'll be a subtle one, but just down at his hip, he'll give a wee fist bump as soon as Rangers score. But they're not going to score because obviously it'll be 3-0 Hibs. But when he's going offside goal, he's going to give a wee fist bump and cheer.
For yourself, Greg?
Nick Walsh is a bootlicker. There's my prediction.
Liam, Nick Walsh, which Hibs player's getting sent off?
I think he's going to try his hardest to send the Hibs player off, but we're not going to give him reason to. Instead, he's just got to dish out 8 or 9 bookings to Hibs players, including sending the manager to the stands, which is then the inspiration for us to go on and win the game.
Right.
You know. And he's going to cry. He's going to go home. He's going to cry in the car on the way home because his beloved Rangers will be beaten out by Hibs.
He'll wipe his tears with a sash he wears. With the sash that he had on the last time at Ibrox.
His father wore.
Playing up to the crowd. That's more Dallas. That sash has been handed down.
Back to govern to govern. Liam, the listeners that are watching on YouTube cannot see you right now, but time for the best part of the show, my man. What you got for us this week?
I'm absolutely struggling here. My internet has just completely given up, and I'm having to hotspot off my phone, so hopefully the roaming charges are going to be covered by the down the slope expenses.
Unlike our other Hibs podcast counterparts, we do not make a fucking penny out of this. We're not good enough. So, unfortunately, you're on the phone bill again, my man.
No. That's what happens when you're the seventh best tips podcast. Your business account's in a negative balance. Anyway, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and everybody else who's not fit into that category. Welcome to the Down the Slope Guess the Who. We've got three contestants here today. Three contestants. Harry's never won, and Harry probably never will win. Greg, who has a reasonable level of Hibs knowledge, I think it's fair to say. And then we've got Plucky Ewan, who occasionally wins when everybody else has already guessed and there's only him left in the competition. So,
I'll take reasonable. I think you're maybe underselling that a wee bit, but I'll take it.
Thank you. Anyway, moving on. We've got five players lined up for you tonight. So I hope wherever you are and wherever you listen to this, you'll be swearing your head off when our contestants can't get them after the first guess. I will be releasing five clues about each of those players. Clues about them one by one and giving guests the opportunity to guess. Once they guess once, they are out and they cannot win the precious 5 points. So kicking us off tonight, our first Hibernian player joined Hibs from Coventry City in 2003.
That's Harry out of this one.
He left Hibs to join Luton Town, where he made 18 appearances. His only Hibernian appearance did not come in the league.
Getting us off to a good start, eh?
He played for Denmark at under-19s and under-21 level, making a grand total of 7 appearances.
Greg's face is worrying me here right now.
He's currently a goalkeeping coach with Skive IK in his home country of Denmark.
Morten Hildegard.
Correct, Mr. Lumsden. Well done, Morten Hildegard.
Thank you, brother.
Harry looks absolutely disgusted with that first one. He's like, that's not, those aren't any clues. He's going to tell me how old he was in 2003. He's going to tell me how old he was in 2003 in a minute or two.
Mate, the first clue could have been his surname starts with Hildegard, and I still wouldn't have got it.
To be fair, I was out
of that. Harry knows the square root of fuck all about Hibs, let's be honest.
Okay, next one.
2003 Hibs.
Next one. I was born on the 20th of January, 1992.
Harry, how you know about this one?
20 years ago.
Honestly, Greg and Ewan for interrupting Harry, they're chronic. I spent...
Oh, well, Harry's not going to get it anyway, so wouldn't they?
He doesn't fucking play anyway.
I spent my entire career in my home country of Scotland. I've made several appearances for Scotland at youth level, but I've never played for the senior team. I was at Celtic during my youth career, but never made an appearance for the first team either. Final clue, lads. I joined Hibernian from our city rivals, Hearts, after making... Correct. Well done, James.
Aye, we used that one the other week. Come on, Liam.
Doesn't mean he can't come back. Doesn't mean he can't come back. James Keaton's basically living rent-free in my guess who head is James Keaton's. Well played, James Keaton's. You and Greg got 5 points each after the first couple of hours. Right, okay.
No,
I'm now worried that this player may also have also come up in recent weeks, but we'll only see. Okay, first clue. I left Hibs to sign for the same club that I joined Hibs from. I made 58 appearances and scored 8 goals.
Liam Craig.
Harry. My man.
Well done, Harold.
He shoots his scores.
Liam, yes. Run through the rest of the clues, though. It's my favourite thing.
Aye. So next one was going to be spent part of my youth career at Ipswich Town. Someone might have got that in there. Perhaps my most famous Hibs moment came missing a penalty. Was the next clue.
On my birthday, I'll have you fucking know, idiot.
And then final clue was I scored my first and only ever career hat-trick in a League Cup tie against Stranraer. There you go.
He scored a brace against Kelly once, eh?
Yes, I went Kelly Park.
That was class.
Kelly Park, eh?
Good what? One.
The home of the Kelly Pie. The home of the Kelly Pie, infamously. Right, okay. First clue. As well as Hibs, I've played for clubs in Scotland and in England. I was born in Glasgow on the 2nd of December, 1988. I am currently still playing in the Scottish Championship. Between 2009 and 2010, I made 8 appearances for Scotland under-21s, scoring 1 goal.
When was that, Liam? Sorry, 2008 to 2010?
2009 to 2010.
Okay.
I left Hibs to join Greenock Morton on loan, where I made 8 appearances and scored no goals.
Stephen McGinn.
Harry.
Oh, Harry.
He's just got 2 in a row. Where does this come from?
Wow.
Absolute flames for Harry, I must say. That was very, very impressive, Harry.
Well done, Harold.
I think that's truly blown me away. Well done.
See what happens right. When you play the right system, Specky. It's amazing. Right, results.
Just to say, if you want something funny, probably watch my face back because you can see for about 5 seconds I can't remember his name, but I know exactly who it is. And I'm like,
oh, so Harry's in pole position then. No, only one left.
Harry's in pole position. All he needs to do to win the quiz is to get this next one, but knowing Harry, he probably won't. Anyway, next clue. I've made 13 appearances for my national team, scoring 2 goals. Most of the goals in my career have come in the English lower leagues. My best goal return in terms of goals to appearances came at Crawley Town between 2016 and 2017, where I scored 20 in 45 appearances. I was born in Coventry on the 1st of December, 1990. Hibs paid a reported £300,000 for me. Correct, James Collins. So the last clue there was Hibs paid £300,000 for me in the summer of 2013. James Collins. Well played. Well played, wait, that man.
Sorry, his goal return for Crawley was better than his goal return for Luton?
In terms of goals to appearances, yeah. That's what I said.
Where did he sign them from again?
Because like I was thinking James Collins until he said that. Like, that ruled him out for me.
Almost 1-2 at Crawley, where he was 1-3 at Luton. So.
Harry, you nearly got there, but just like that day 6 years ago, you got pegged back at the last minute like the Jambos did. Unlucky.
Do you want a decider?
You'd know something.
I don't know that.
With the caveat that if Greg gets it, then
it's done.
There's not going to be another decider. It's just a draw. Right, okay.
No,
play me.
Okay.
No, thanks, brother. Can I just say, I'd rather draw 3 ways than being in. We're not doing that. That's pressure chat. Go on.
Sharp specs.
Right, we have enough interruptions for one night. We've had enough interruptions for one night. If we could get some silence on the call, please. Thank you. Okay, moving on. My best goal return came for Cork City, where I scored 34 goals in 79 appearances. I joined Hibs in 2012, making 14 appearances and scoring one solitary goal. I played for my country at under 21 and B level, making 10 appearances and scoring one goal again. I started my youth career at Coventry City again. Didn't make a first year appearance for them during that spell.
Is it Roy O'Donovan?
I'm sure it is.
Well played, Ewan Wilson. It's Roy O'Donovan. Wow, what a note to end on, eh? What a player to end on as well.
Fucking Roy O'Donovan. Remember when you said earlier, sum up Kevin Nisbet's season in an instant, sum up his current run of form in a player.
Did they not score quite a good goal against Kilmarnock?
He scored a world at Kelly, aye.
He
scored a penalty raid as well. I think he's got a penalty at Scottish Cup. The Scottish Cup run, aye.
Good player, yeah. Good player. He's having a good time out in Australia, playing for Sydney Olympic in the National Premier League, New South Wales.
Well, I love his best life, to be fair.
Aye, fair play.
And he's still scoring less goals than he did for Cork City in a league that's not even the fucking top league in Australia. Jesus, fuck. Well, Harry, get up. You bottled it. Shame.
Harry, ball him for that shite. Get him to help. Don't just sit there and take it. No, anyway.
I'm back. Well, nobody heard it, but it's fine.
Right. Any other business?
Nah, wrap up.
Nah.
No.
Right. Thanks very much for listening once again. We'll be back. Are we doing an episode later this week?
We'll meet you.
So I have to beat Rangers 3-0 at Ibrox.
We've
definitely got to record.
We'll be back probably on Thursday night recording again, previewing the Arbroath Scottish Cup game and looking back on hopefully 3 points gained at Ibrox. But thank you very much for listening. Cheers.
Cheers.
Good night. God bless.